The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
Our topic over the last few nights has been the enlightened journey of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. In the Quran, Allah Ta'ala says in Surah Al-Anbiya, Surah 21, verse number 107, أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ وَمَا أَرْسَلْنَاكَ إِلَّا رَحْمَةً لِلْعَالَمِينَ. O Prophet, we have sent you as a mercy for the human beings. Before, they were filled with the complete opposite of mercy towards one another. But now the Prophet comes and teaches them another way of approaching things. The Quran is revealed, and in Surah Ma'idah, verse number 32, Allah describes the reason for why human lives are precious. He says, مِنْ أَجْلِ ذَٰلِكَ كَتَبْنَا عَلَىٰ بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ أَنَّهُ مَنْ قَتَلَ نَفْسًا بِغَيْرِ نَفْسٍ أَوْ فَسَادٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَكَأَنَّمَا قَتَلَ النَّاسَ جَمِيعًا وَمَنْ أَحْيَاهَا فَكَأَنَّمَا أَحْيَى النَّاسَ جَمِيعًا. That when it comes to killing a human being, the reason why it's prohibited when it's not for a just cause is because it is the equivalent of killing the entirety of the human race. Now, I don't know if you've had a chance to ponder upon this. Why does God equate one with many? Because one is equal to one when we look at it mathematically. One life for one life. But here, when we look at what Allah is saying here, He's saying that when you kill indiscriminately, when you kill unjustly, there's no reason for it. That act that is taking place is an inhuman act. It is below the dignity of a human being to take that sort of action. And so what you're doing is you're actually warring with humanity itself. You're challenging the status of a human being as a dignified entity on this earth. You're basically saying that human beings need to now be reduced to the level of animals. That's according to one interpretation. But on the other hand, وَمَنْ أَحْيَاهَا فَكَأَنَّمَا أَحْيَى النَّاسَ جَمِيعًا, that whoever gives life, it is as if they have given life to the entirety of human beings. So we see that during the time of the Prophet, there is a new order, a new era that is established, one of respect, one of forgiveness, one of peace. Warring tribes come together as brothers, and you're familiar with the stories. But not too long afterwards, the Umayyads come to power, and now some of these same traditions that were there, the ugly head is now being reared again. So we find, for example, Muawiyah la'anatullahi alayhi, it's quite amazing. You know, at his time, they had established a society which was a caste society. You had the free people, and then you had this group called the Mawali. The Mawali were mostly from Persia. And they were treated as like second-class citizens, or even worse, sometimes more like untouchables. If, for example, a free person was walking, the Mawali had to walk behind them. They couldn't make contact with each other. They couldn't, you know, operate as brothers and sisters or anything like that. They were given the most lowly of professions and jobs to do. And history says that Muawiyah, you know, being a governor, when he found it inconvenient to have a large number of Mawali in his cities, he would just order that the excess should be killed. Just go and take care of them, get rid of them. Because he didn't want to deal with the expense of dealing with them. For economic reasons, he would say, we're just going to kill the excess. But the crimes don't stop there. We see that the governors of Muawiyah, in the city of Kufa, the governor, he causes so much blood to be shed that they say that the population of orphans visibly increased leading up to the time of Ashura, meaning that we're talking about this is the time period of the reign of the Bani Umayyah, right? Muawiyah at the time of Imam Ali alayhi salam up to his shahada, right? After that, Imam Hassan, and now this is what's happening. More than 8,000 people were killed during his time. We're told that this barbarism was such that, for example, Ziyad, the father of Ubaidullah, Ziyad, when there was a woman who was protesting his policies, what he does is that he orders that she be killed. But before she's killed, they do something to her body to mutilate it. And then the body is hung in the marketplace as a warning for everyone. This is 2 years before the tragedy of Ashura takes place. And these types of killings, now, normally you would think that people have a conscience. They would react to this. They would say that we don't accept this because we have a standard for right and wrong. But perhaps, you know, one of the worst examples of people being apathetic and silent is when it comes to the example of one of the companions of Imam Ali alayhi salam, where when he goes and he refuses to do la'an on Imam Ali alayhi salam, he refuses to curse Imam Ali alayhi salam, he's killed by Muawiyah. But in order to support his killing, he gets the signature of 70 noble men from Kufa to support what's happening here, even though they knew that this was unjust. They don't want to speak out of fear of what Muawiyah is going to do. Shurayh al-Qadi, this is something that's quite shocking. Shurayh was a judge. He was somebody, they say, you know, he might have been a companion of the Prophet, but maybe he was born after the death of the Prophet. But he had become prominent during the time of the second Khalifa, as he was known to be like a judge. And he was a judge in Kufa at the time when, you know, Yazid comes to power and he wants to kill Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So you're familiar with the story of Hani ibn Urwa, one of the really good supporters of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Hani is imprisoned by Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad. And in prison, they beat him, they abuse him, right? He's not being treated in a decent manner, and eventually he's killed. The family of Hani ibn Urwa, right? His cousins, his brothers, his father, everyone is there, right? They're gathered around Darul Imara, the palace, and they're worried about Hani's state. And they're threatening, they're saying that, look, if you don't bring us Hani, if you don't assure that he's safe, right, we're going to do something. So what does Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad do at that time? He says that, okay, you know what? I'm going to have Shurayh al-Qadi, he's the judge, he's going to go and see Hani, and then he'll come back to you and he'll tell you what Hani's situation is. When Shurayh goes and sees Hani, Hani tells him that, tell my people that they've done this to me. Tell them to come to my rescue. This is unfair, right? They've beaten me. They've, you know, I'm wounded, I'm sick, like, to help me. Shurayh comes out, and history says that he is intending to pass along the message. He has an amana, after all. It's a trust. He's intending to pass along the message. But what happens is that he sees that one of Ubaidullah's spies is there. He's watching what's taking place. And because of that, he just goes and tells his family that, I went inside and I saw that Hani ibn Urwa is fine. Nothing's happened to him. Now, brothers and sisters, historical experts, those who analyze history, they say that this particular testimony, which was not fair, it was something that was a lie, they said that had Shurayh only said the truth to the family of Hani, at that moment, his family would have gone and rescued him. It's very possible that this would have led to Kufa being under the rule of Muslim ibn Aqil. And eventually, it would have been possible for Imam Hussein alayhi salam to go to Kufa. And they say that for at least 6 months, Imam Hussein alayhi salam would have been in power in Kufa. And what contribution would Imam Hussein have made to history? Of course, I mean, his contribution is unmeasurable, and, you know. But what else would he have contributed had he been in power as well. They say, they question this. They say, they muse over it. They say, that what would have happened? This could have been a turning point in history. What was the reason for this? Just a feeling of not wanting to be under pressure because of the spy of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. So what are we looking at here, brothers and sisters? We're looking at the return of a culture of killing, of prisoner abuse, of detaining, of treating refugees in a second-class manner. We're looking at a return of complete apathy, where people are not doing anything in face of the injustice that is in front of their own eyes. And what does this lead to? It paves the way for Karbala. Because when these rulers are doing one thing after the other, and they see that the reaction from the people is mute, they're not speaking up, they're not protesting, and they say that, well, if I could do this, then I can do something even bigger the next time.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.